We say that abortion pills are a tool for freedom. And really, they are a tool of power. Mifepristone and misoprostol, those two pills are really the pills which change the perspective of abortions, because we actually have this power in our hands.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zum Was tun Podcast. Hier sprechen wir einmal im Monat mit linken Aktivistinnen und Aktivisten darüber, wie wir als Linke nicht nur kämpfen, sondern auch gewinnen können. Wir, das sind Inken Beermann und Valentin Isen, wir diskutieren beide viel über politische Strategie und machen diesen Podcast, weil wir wollen, dass ihr an den Diskussionen teilhaben könnt.
Vielleicht habt ihr es auch gesehen, in den letzten Sonntagsfragen war die AfD immer weiter auf dem Vormarsch. Und das sehen wir leider auch international, dass die Rechte immer stärker gewinnt. Und häufig geht es dabei vordergründig eher dann um Themen wie Migration oder nationale Themen. Und was dabei oft so ein bisschen unter den Tisch fällt, für die Rechte aber super zentral ist, ist das Recht auf reproduktive Selbstbestimmung von Frauen. Und genau darüber wollen wir heute sprechen. Und zwar mit einer Aktivistin aus Polen, wo ja bereits die PiS regiert, die Partei für Recht und Gerechtigkeit, nationalkonservative Partei. Und seit 2020 wurden in Polen tatsächlich auch das Recht auf Abtreibung oder auf Schwangerschaftsabbruch enorm eingeschränkt. Dass die PiS in Polen regiert, könnte sich aber diesen Herbst ändern, wenn in Polen die nationalen Wahlen anstehen. Und das hat auch gar nicht so unerheblich tatsächlich mit unserem Thema heute, nämlich dem Recht auf Schwangerschaftsabbruch, zu tun. Was genau, das erfahrt ihr jetzt gleich in der Folge.
Ja, und unsere Gesprächspartnerin Justyna Wyszynska, die ist Mitbegründerin und Mitglied des polnischen Kollektivs Abortion Dream Team, das zum europäischen Netzwerk Abortion Without Borders gehört. Das Kollektiv stellt Informationen für Schwangerschaftsabbrüche zur Verfügung. Am 15. März diesen Jahres wurde Justyna in Warschau wegen ihrem Aktivismus, wegen sogenannter Beihilfe zur Abtreibung verurteilt. Wie sie damit persönlich umgeht und ja, welche strategischen Lehren sie vielleicht auch zieht aus dem Kampf für reproduktive Selbstbestimmung, das erzählt sie im Interview.
Viel Spaß bei der Folge.
Viel Spaß.
So now we've met Justyna in the Zoom room because we are recording the session on Zoom because Justyna is in Poland and Valentina and me, we are in Berlin, and I'm very happy that we are able to meet you via the digital device. So welcome to our podcast. Hello.
Hi, hello. And I want to really say thank you for the invitation.
Hello, Justyna. Thanks for being on our show.
Hi. Justyna, you're an activist for abortion rights in Poland. Maybe as a first question, could you tell our listeners who you are and how it came about that you are an abortion rights activist today?
I am an abortion activist in Poland, or actually abortion doula in Poland. I support people when they want to do abortion at home with pills. And I never planned to be an activist, actually. I just started to be by a coincidence, but by unwanted pregnancy. I found myself in unwanted pregnancy in 2006. Then I realized that we don't have enough information about how to do it. At home, I took this risk, used many times pills, failed. And then I found the website, which was, we just started. It was Women on Web at the time. And I ordered pills from them. They came to me around 11 weeks, when I was pregnant 11 weeks. And I took them and I was so afraid about taking pills at home because there was so many myths around this, but it was physically very easy. And then I decided that I really don't want any other women to be so afraid that I was at that moment. And I started to share this kind of experience I've built. And I was writing on many, many places on the internet, like blogs, forums, that those are the pills which are really safe and they can be able to order in from the safe space, from the safe website. They protect our data. Nobody will know. They come, really, they come to your home address. So it's easy to take them. And I met many women in the same situation I was at that moment, and we started to do the same. And in December 2006, we've built our own online forum on which we were like taking care about the people. We want them to feel safe in this space without any judgment, any not being criticized about their decisions, and be able to open without any taboo about their feelings, even if they were not nice at that moment. But like really be open, talk openly about what we feel. And yes, it started like this. And now we can help thousands of people because of this network. It really helps us to be very sufficient in our work.
In Poland, but not only there, also in, for example, the United States or many other countries around the world, right-wing parties are pushing very hard against abortion. And with the right-wing government in power in Poland, there have also been great measures to illegalize abortion. Can you maybe explain a little bit how the situation is politically right now and how you are dealing with the situation as an activist?
It's a long story about the access to abortion in Poland, because many, many years ago, we have this access. Then because of the changes and the influence of the church, this law has dramatically changed. And by the very conservative parties which we have in our Polish parliament, even in 2020, the law in Poland started to be more restrictive, because not by the law, not by the parliament, but because of the courts, because of the judges in the constitutional court, the law has been changed. And the situation that pregnant person whose fetus has some abnormalities, genetical abnormalities or other diseases which cannot let this fetus be like properly growing human, this situation is now forbidden in Poland. We cannot do abortions because of the fetal abnormalities. And it's happened by the constitutional court, by the judges, not by the politicians. Of course, there was influence of the politicians, the influence of anti-choice organizations, but it was by the judges. So in Poland, actually the Polish politicians, but those wing sides, they rather don't want to change the law. They rather use anti-choice organizations to push some changes, to push some proposals. Polish politicians doesn't chase It looks that they doesn't chase the abortion activists. They are not interested in our work. You know Kaczyński, the politicians, very well. So even a week ago, he said, in Poland, you can get abortion on every corner. So we know that he's not interested in chasing us, the activists. He just doesn't want abortion to happen in the hospitals. And this is the goal: to stop abortions in the national healthcare. We can do abortions at home. We can do abortions outside of the country. We can do whatever we want, but not in the hospitals. And it's really sad, because there is a push on the doctors, there is a push on the people, and there is a lot of freezing moments when politicians and doctors are afraid of like acting on the pro-abortion side. And people are confused because they don't actually know what is happening in what is possible, what is not possible. We have other two situations in Polish law when we can get abortions in national healthcare. The one is when our life and health is at risk. And the second one is after the sexual violence. And even in those two cases, it's almost impossible to get, because in first situation, when our life and health is at risk, the doctors are so afraid of doing the abortion because they're afraid of the prosecution that they actually wait for the moment that the heart of the something which is looks like heart of the fetus is stopped beating. So they wait till the last moment, and sometimes people die because of the sepsis. So the doctors wait that infection is so high that they just cannot save the person. And when we talk about the sexual violence, there is a really ridiculous situation, because in Poland, to get abortion because of the sexual violence, you have to have a document from the prosecutor that he started the investigation. So it means that after the rape, you have to go to the police station and report it. And then the prosecutor have to have the enough evidence to start the investigation. So it means that actually you have to say, this and this person just raped me. And many people just don't want to go to the police station and say it, because there is so stigma around it. It's the police actually cannot behave in such situations. They are not able to protect the person. You have to ask so many times, say the same story again and again. So people really, they don't want to go there. And getting this document for the prosecutor is not very easy. And you have only 12 weeks to this. So when you realize that you actually are pregnant, it's 5-6 weeks. And then you have only 6 weeks to organize everything, to report it. And normally, if you want to report the rape, you have to go just after the rape, right? Not after, when you realize that you are actually pregnant. And this is the situation that it's hard for us to get. So people travel with the abortion without borders. People use abortion pills at home because they know that they will be treated better with the activists, with NGOs, not by the doctors, not by the healthcare system.
Thank you very much for that answer. Really, I think that gave a good context for our discussion of your activism also. You already said that you're an activist and also founder of the organization Abortion Dream Team. Maybe you can just I think you also already said that you're sending pills and that you're also sending people to get abortions abroad. Maybe you can just tell our listeners a little bit about your activism and how the organization works and what service and help you provide to women.
Women on the Net are actually the organization who run the helpline, who run the online forum. We can support people with the information, how they can buy abortion pills, what is happening during medical abortion, where you can travel abroad, and give this all very basic basic and practical information. How to pay, for example. How to do wire transfer for the pills. For some of us, which especially those who never made like wire transfer between countries, it could be like tricky. So we give those practical information for people. They are able to get pills. And Abortion Dream Team started the activism because we know, we like have this thought that giving information on the internet is not enough. We have to like meet with people. We have to meet with them face to face, and it's better for us to do it. So we started to travel. We started to travel around the bigger cities in Poland, and because of the pandemic, then my court case, we stopped this activity. And luckily, we will be able to start it again this summer. We'll be traveling also and meet with people to talk really openly face to face, how they can use abortion pills, how they can support their siblings, how they can support their friends, and show them it's really safe for us to support other people. Everybody can do it. And it's no shame for us especially for those who have had abortion experience, and we shouldn't be afraid. And it's legal in Poland to do self-managed abortion. And people should not be afraid about sharing their experience, asking for help, because those who actually have this abortion experience, so many that they are really supported.
You just mentioned your court case. Could you also maybe give a little bit of an explanation of what happened and how this fits into this story?
Yes, of course. It started in 2020, in February. It was the situation when the pandemic started. We got information from a person who needed abortion pills. She canceled the visit in Germany twice because she couldn't leave the country. She was blackmailed by her partner if she leaves the country because they previously had a kid. And when she wanted to go to Germany, she had this idea about having kid with her. So if she leaves the country with the kid, he would report the police about the family kidnapping. So she was afraid to leave the country, and she asked if there is any chance for us to help her in some way. So she let us know that she's controlled. She have to cancel every email, every message she's sending to us. She can communicate with us only in the moment she's calling or she's writing. So my colleagues asked me if I have my own abortion pills and give me a background, what is happening with this person. So I decided that I will share the pills with her. And this partner somehow got this information that somebody sent her pills. And when she got the pills from the post, he called the police, and police came to the house and took the pills from her. So it was in the envelope, and there was my data on the envelope. So this is how they got me. So when the police got this envelope, they just got to me. They came to my house. It was the February 2020. They come to my house in June 2021, after more than a year. So I got two charges, helping in abortion by sending pills and distributing the abortion pills without the proper license. I got sentenced because of the first charge, because of the helping in abortion. It is limiting of my freedom for 8 months. I have to do the social service 30 hours every month. We send appeal to the Court of Appeal. So now I'm waiting for the court case in the Court of Appeal. And it depends what will happen during the elections, because we will have elections in October. And how which our party will win during the elections. Probably if this left-wing parties will have better scores, the judges will change the verdict. If not, they will probably keep the same verdict. In Polish Court of Appeal, it's impossible to get higher sentence than it was given before. So if the in appeal they will keep the same verdict, I have to do the social service for 8 months, and I still don't know what it be. I was laughing after the press conference, after I got the sentence, that I do the social service for almost 17 years, so they should
maybe you can do the social service at Abortion Dream Team then.
Yes, I really do love it, really. And if it would be possible, I will do it for sure.
Hallo und sorry für die kurze Unterbrechung. Du hast den Was tun Podcast. Wir sprechen heute über das Recht auf reproduktive Selbstbestimmung und Abtreibung. Wenn du Freunde oder Bekannte hast oder vielleicht auch andere AktivistInnen in deiner Gruppe, die sich auch für das Thema interessieren, dann teil doch jetzt die Folge mit ihnen. Klick dafür in deinem Podcatcher einfach auf den Teilen-Button und schick die Folge gleich jetzt an deine Freunde. Und jetzt viel Spaß beim Weiterhören. So, you were already talking about the fact that you were sending abortion pills. That's kind of a more or less newer method of doing abortions. And it's apparently also in Germany not very common to use. Maybe just for our listeners, could you explain what this kind of abortion is and how it works, and why is it so good in a system that where clinics can't do or don't want to do abortions anymore?
We say that abortion pills are a tool for freedom, and really they are a tool of power, because we have to talk this from two point of view. First, the view of the person who is using them. You don't have to ask anybody for the permission of doing abortions. You don't have to explain anyone your reason. Nobody will know, because you are doing this at your own home, at your own toilet, and you just need nobody to ask. And of course, it's much, much cheaper than the procedure in the clinic. For example, if you have to go to a clinic, abortion around up to 12 weeks or 14 weeks costs around 500 euro. And abortion pills cost 75, actually. So the difference is huge. And if we look at the even in the procedure, you don't have to hire so much staff. You don't have to use those tools. It's much safer than using the vacuum section. It's really, really safe. And it, especially in the first trimester, WHO is saying this is good procedure with high quality and really gives the privacy of the person who is using it. Abortion pills should be possible to get like emergency contraceptions everywhere without a prescription because we sometimes need abortions. And really, we don't have to ask anyone for it because it's really safe method. And every doctor who is blocking this because he thinks or she thinks we have to be controlled, it's a myth because really it's like having a period. Mifepristone and misoprostol, those two pills are really the pills which change the perspective of abortions because we actually have this power in our hands. I mean, we, the person who needs abortions, we really don't need to ask for anyone for those. So this is why we think this abortion pills should be available everywhere, really everywhere.
And so if I'm like a woman now and I'm in need of an abortion, how does it work like physically? So I kind of get the pill and then I take the pill and what happens next?
If you are a person who is in Poland and living in Poland, you have to go online. You have to order pills from the website womenhelp.org. You have to fill a form, which is like an interview with a doctor. There are some questions about your health, about some diseases. So you have to like actually answer and be open and trust these organizations, these websites who support you with the pills, because the much you be open, then it will be safer for me. Because if you, for example, we know people in Poland sometimes lie because they think if they have some diseases, the abortion pills will not be available for them. So we know it. So better is to be open and not to lie, because then we protect ourselves if we are open and tell the truth. Because those questionnaires are read by a doctors who check if you are able to use abortion pills or not. If you are not able to use abortion pills, then advise to call Abortion at Borders helpline, and we advise people to which countries they can go for surgical abortion, or we organize abortions in the country if there is so tricky situation of the person is, and there are some risks of this pregnant person life or health. So we really want people to get the best service that it's possible. So if you want to use abortion pills and you like healthy, you don't have any blood diseases, so you can go online on the website womenhelp.org and order them. You have to fill the form, pay for the pills, and wait for the post office to come. It normally takes around 10 days, week and a half, and the pills arrives. First, you take mifepristone. It's a hormone pill, something like contraceptive pill. You just swallow the pill and that's it. And then magic happens, because after 24 hours, you take misoprostol. Misoprostol is making the uterus cramps in the uterus. So then it's easier for the uterus to clean it. And those cramps, I forgot the word. The fetus will fall from the uterus after the cramps. So then it's then we see the blood, we see some clots, something which looks like a clot. And in higher pregnancies, like 10, 12 weeks, sometimes we can see fetus. And for us, for people who actually have a period month to month, we know how to deal with the blood. We know what to do. So for us, physically, it's heavier than our period. We can sometimes experience pain, but we know what to do with the pain. We know what kind of pills we take during the period to avoid the pain. So this is what we do. We have to do normally. Like we act during the heavy period we have every month sometimes.
Right. And then what, just like in other cases of complications, and can people in Poland then still go to hospitals, or what will happen to them?
Complications are happening less than 1% of all the medical abortions. So it's really rare. But when it happens, or sometimes we feel unsafe in the situation because we have different levels of medicalizations, so then we can go to a hospital. We can say, I'm pregnant, I just started to bleed. And the doctors are obliged to give us support. They have to check us, they have to see what's going on. And we can even be very open with the doctors because it's legal for us to do self-managed abortion. We can say, I just use misoprostol and I start to bleed, but I feel unsafe because I think the bleeding is higher than I expected. And nothing, like, really, we are not criminalized. Nothing is happening. But, you know, doctors are different, and also the staff in the hospitals, they have different levels of the stigma, and they are only just people, and they can have their private comments about our decisions. So if we are not prepared for this, or we feel it's too much for us in this situation, we can just say, I am pregnant, I just started to bleed, and that's it. We don't have to tell the whole story, because the medical abortion and natural miscarriage is like almost the same process. So nobody will recognize if it was a spontaneous miscarriage or just it's a miscarriage. It happened because of the using misoprostol. And this is why for us, it's really, if we are brave enough to say, I am during the medical abortion and I came to a hospital because I think something is happening and I not feel safe. It's okay, but we don't have to, really.
That's really interesting. I think that what you just said, an abortion by a pill, for example, and natural miscarriage basically have the same symptoms. And that's something that really kind of gives security to women also to go to hospitals, because there's also from medical personnel no way to know, which kind of also leads me to the next question of the political and medical context in Poland. So I think you already said that the kind of the abortion ban is mostly due to the courts, and that it's not illegal to order pills, for example. But the kind of the societal context in Poland is very heated around this issue. Like there's like the churches and the peace, the National Conservative Party that really carry this issue forward. And then there's the whole movement against or for the right of women to have their choice if they want to get kids or not. How do you strategize in that societal environment and also in the changing legal situation?
Actually, the Polish government is helping us in this. By changing the law, they help us to explain people why we need abortion access. Before the Constitutional Tribunal, the Polish society, it was around 47% of the Polish society wants to have abortion without giving any reason up to 12 weeks. And then Constitutional Tribunal happened. Then those deaths happened because doctors were more afraid than activists of doing legal abortions in the Polish healthcare system. And in last polls, which has been done beginning of this year, more than 70% of society wants to have abortion without giving any reasons up to 12 weeks. So really, Polish society is more modern than Polish politicians. And I'm so surprised that before the elections, the politicians doesn't listen to their voters. Because if it's a 70%, it means also that Peace, the Law and Justice Party voters, are also wants to have legal abortions up to 12 weeks. Because we know that with us, also abortions are, they need abortions. The voters of women who vote on Law and Justice, they also need abortions. And we hear it many times. I am a Catholic person, and my situation is very special, and I just need abortion. Yes, it happens. So we know that they need abortions, and we know it. So if we have kind of polls like this, we know that society has changed because the stories changed them. The situation changed them. So people said no, too much, no. And I'm really curious what will happen during the elections, how the voters will vote, what will be the turning point in the like thinking about to whom they should give a vote. Many parties proposing that if they win the election, they will change the law. But for us, changing the law, like promise a changing the law is not like just this is a slogan only. We know that we know what we want. First, we want decriminalization of abortion, especially those who help in abortions, like activists, like doctors who are brave enough to do it even when the law doesn't let them, because we know there are some of them. They have not been caught yet, but luckily. And the second thing, we want mifepristone and misoprostol be registered to the purpose of abortion, because misoprostol is registered only used in the Polish hospitals, only off label. This means that it's not registered as abortion pill. And mifepristone, this hormonal pill, is not registered at all. So we even cannot order, like legally order, and have the storage stocks in Poland of those kind of pill. So those two things are necessary for us. When we talk with the politicians, we always ask, what will they do? Those two things.
It's really interesting. It also shows how pervasive patriarchy is, but also how important reproductive control is for maintaining patriarchy or patriarchal systems, that they even give up strategic decisions actually politically, because as you could see in the midterms with Joe Biden, he was polling so bad, but then the Supreme Court voted against the right to abortion in the US, and that kind of secured Joe Biden's midterms because everybody was so upset basically, and the whole abortion issue turned over majorities even in the US, where there's like such a big also right-wing community and movement going on. I think it's really interesting, and also a good thing to look at which issues we really need to tackle also to overthrow patriarchy, because these are apparently also the key issues for the other side. So they may be also the key issues for us to gain freedom. I'm just like going over to Germany, because in Germany, the situation is not as bad. It's also, what I find really interesting, you say in Poland, the situation is so polarized. And so it's a major political issue. In Germany, we have this weird in-between law where in the law, kind of abortion is illegal, but it's free of punishment if you do certain things. So, for example, if there's a medical indication or if there's a criminological indication, so if you were raped, for example, or if you go and have these consultancies. And then if you get like a form that you did the consultancy, you can go and have an abortion if you find a clinic that can do it. So here we have a problem, or like the bigger problem is that fewer and fewer doctors are providing abortions because they're afraid of right-wing campaigns, or clinics are like, oh, this topic is too hot for us to handle. We're not saying anything about it. You send people to other countries to have abortions because in Poland it's so difficult. So how does the situation in a country like Germany, for example, also affect your work?
Because we built a network of Abortion Without Borders, we have these cooperations with many organizations in Europe, also with one in Germany, it's Ciocia Basia organization, and they know what is happening in the country. So we rely on the organizations who actually live, work in these countries, and they can advise us what is best for a person, what is in the specific situation. So we know some basic information, what is possible, what is not possible in each country in Europe, and we try to adjust to a person's needs. So yes, and sometimes, especially about the Germany, this 2 days waiting period, this discussion with the social worker is always a barrier for us, because person have to travel twice to Germany. Of course, to those who live close to the border, it's not a problem. But when we have a person, for example, living 300 kilometers far from a border, then we rather choose a country where this person can go only once and return to home without a pregnancy. So laws which build a barriers are really like anti-abortion laws. So a pandemic helped us a lot, because in many situations, especially with Germany, those kind of meetings with the social workers could be made online. But right now, you have to meet personally. So now it's hard to be worse for us to work with the German country. And we rather decide to send people to Czech Republic or to Austria, which is still having the same limit of abortion and the same prices. But really, you just go and that's it. Don't need to wait 2 days for the procedure. We have to navigate around those laws in Europe. And really, the situation is not good enough for any person who is living in the country. Even if we got used to the situation, we have in countries, but still the situation like mine, for example, the court case for helping in abortion could happen in every country. And we don't understand about also the limits. Why 12? Why 14 week of limit? This is a... In Europe, when you look at those limits, it's a completely mess. In Netherlands, we have 22. In Germany, Austria, we have 14. In Belgium, Czech Republic, France, we have 12. Why? Why? There is no explanation to this.
No, I think it's really random, but only a product of the situation of the lawmaking time, because that's
of
basically...
Course.
Yeah, it's just what you could get through during the time. And also when that law was actually introduced in Germany, there were huge protests by the abortion rights activists who were saying, we don't need the consultancy and we need the possibility to abortions for the whole time. But then it was like a conservative government who was doing the law. And so this was the compromise kind of that they put in action.
Sorry für die kurze Unterbrechung. Du hörst den Was tun Podcast. Wir produzieren einmal im Monat unsere Folgen werbefrei für alle und unabhängig. Und wenn du möchtest, dass das auch in Zukunft so bleibt, dann wäre es toll, wenn du uns mit einer Fördermitgliedschaft unterstützt. Du findest den Link dazu in den Shownotes. Klicke jetzt auf den Link und unterstütze Was tun und den Dissens Podcast im Doppelpack. Und jetzt viel Spaß beim Weiterhören.
I have one question that I think falls a little bit off the frame right now, but I'm still thinking about it. So when I came to read about abortions a lot, I've never kind of had one or never in this situation to need one. But I read that many people or many women feel very isolated because you're just yourself. You maybe have a partner or you don't have a partner, and then you have the test and then you're sadly pregnant. And then you're kind of really... just very alone with the whole problem, and especially in a country where that's very conservative, where you maybe don't know with whom you really can talk about the problem. I think many, many women feel very, very isolated and also insecure then as a result of that, of what they can do and what's safe. And I feel that's always a political problem too, because people can get into action if there's like some kind of collective, if they kind of feel this is a collective problem or a societal one, or other people feel the same, it's not only me. And then you kind of see this is structural and we need to do something about it. So is there also a strand of your work where you try to unite women around the issue and maybe kind of invest in movement work?
Stigmatization in Poland is huge, and it influences on like many, many levels. We, by the giving abortion a faces, because the three of us, me, Natalia and Kinga in Abortion Dream Team, we openly saying that we are the people who actually have had abortions. We've been on the cover of this very well-known Polish newspaper, just openly saying we have had abortions, and we are the people who actually helping those who will have abortions. And we know that sharing the stories is it's a very important thing. When I found myself in unwanted pregnancy, I really thought that I am the only one who got into this situation, really, because the stigmatization didn't let other people to talk about their experience, because we are so afraid about judgment, about calling us bad mothers or just selfish women, slutty women, and, you know, all these things. So we are so afraid about sharing this. But we know from other countries that abortion is a medical procedure, one of the like biggest abortion, I mean, in numbers, the abortion procedure. And when we knew this as abortion activists, so this is why we wanted to show if we have this experience and we are living happily, you probably have the same. But you are afraid to tell this because you are ashamed of it because of the stigmatization. Because in your environment, in your town, village, place you live, there is a probably one person who is stigmatizing you, who just said some stigmatizing things, and you are afraid that you will be marked as a bad person because you had the decision. So we use our stories as kind of tool to show we don't afraid to say it. And there are so many women right now who actually just said this, same like us. There were a few manifestos in the newspapers about women who or pregnant person who just said, "I just decided to have abortions." Even in media, we from time to time watch the kind of reports about women in Polish hospitals, and they're showing their faces. It's so nice, really, because it shows that people are starting not afraid to share this because they think this is my right and this is what I am not should be ashamed. And we really support every person who is sharing this story. The trip we are planning in near future, it's also to build this community about with the people who have this abortion experience. On the evenings, we plan to do those circles of people who have this abortion experience to share this, to tell what they have, what kind of feelings they have, because there is a mixture of feeling. Every person has different story, different feelings. And we want to hear, we really want to hear and meet with those who have this abortions and to meet also us to see that you are not the only one who have this and you shouldn't be feeling like totally alone in this country, that you are just one. And I am the one of the person who is actually answering calls on abortion without borders. And from time to time I hear, "I'm so lonely in this. I just got pregnant. This is unwanted pregnancy." And I all the time say, "Sorry to say, but you are not so special. I just got 20 calls from a person like you. Sorry, but you are not a special person. This is not this situation." And it when you hear something like this, there was around 20 like me before. Okay, so this is a common experience, it means, because, and the stigmatization is also acting on people that they are not sharing this, even in their family, with the family members, because they are afraid of the judgment. So if you don't talk about this, you don't know how many of your close people have this experience. And we try to engage people to say, give a sign that you want to hear this, that people are that you are open to their decisions. Let them know, publish something on your social media that you don't care about the people's decisions. You are their friend and you want to support them no matter the decision is. And that this is why I think the change happened. This is why I think we have 70% of the society wants abortion up to 12 weeks legal with the Polish healthcare system.
Cool.
Very cool. And you as a person who has given her face somehow to this particular struggle, I suppose that you also receive threats, stigma, people blackmailing you probably. And
I think this is a phenomenon that happens to many women who speak publicly for political struggles, but probably especially for a topic like abortion. Could you, on a personal note, maybe explain to our listeners, explain to us a little bit how you deal with this, what do you do that it doesn't discourage you?
Because of it comes from my own experience and my own like feelings about this, I really don't care. For me, the biggest issue is to support people who need information, who need access to abortion, then put my emotions to dreads of people who doesn't accept my decisions or my activity. Really, I really don't care. I block those kind of messages. I protect myself. And even I got some comments. I really don't try. I'm not trying to read. I do it for 17 years and I built kind of wall to protect myself from this. Also, I think this is a kind of, if there is, especially anti-choice organizations, they are posting many things about abortion dream team or abortion without borders. And we think that if they post something on about us, even if it's something on as we are bad people, then this is kind of advertisement for us. Because those people would never come to our websites. They would never come to our social media to read the content. And if they got this information from anti-choice organizations, then we reach to them also. And in the situation they are in unwanted pregnancies, they would know what to come to whom to come. So this is why we really don't care. But we many times have heard you should go to a court. You should sue them because they use your faces. No, we never will do it because we think this is kind of tool for us to get to them, to people who would we never reach. And but also this is us, the activists. This is our decision. But what the anti-choice are doing, this is really nasty. And we don't know how to prepare people to this. You know, Facebook now is a most common tool for people to look for some kind of advices. We try to explain that Facebook is not the best thing. And it's good that on some groups you can anonymize yourself and people, you can ask about something and you can protect your own like personality. But if you don't do it, the anti-choice people, like posting you, they send you private messages. Change the decision, because if you don't, we inform your whole family about this. You know, you on Facebook, you have these connections with the partner, sister, brother, mother, father. You know, you because we love it. And they are doing this. And it's so nasty, especially with young people. And then they have some problems at homes because parents got this knowledge, and if they disagree, there is a problem for them. So this is really nasty, and I think it's not ethical to use this, but this is what they do. This is how they try to change people's minds.
Wow. Really bad. So the listeners of our podcast are mostly activists in Switzerland and Germany and Austria. If they want to support abortion rights in Poland or worldwide or in their own country, how can they get involved, or what would you tell them how to support abortion rights?
If they want to be activists, they can contact organizations in Austria or in Germany to be engaged in the activities they are doing. In Austria, there is a Ciocia Vienia, Aunt Vienia, the organization which is located in Vienna. In Germany, there is Aunt Basia, Ciocia Basia. They are located in Berlin. So you have to write to these organizations and ask how you can join to them. But, you know, there is an other point of this story. Abortion costs a lot. And those in the clinics in Germany or Austria cost around 500 euro. And if you cannot get abortions up to 12 weeks, because different reasons. You have to look for abortions more than 12 to 14 weeks. It costs more around 1,000 euro. So in each country or on a website, abortioneu.eu, you can donate our activity. And we can, because of those money, we receive from like individual people, sometimes small donations. We can pay, especially for those who cannot afford the cost. Those who are in a situation of fetal abnormalities, especially now, it's in Poland, it's around 1,000 people who every year travels with us, especially to Netherlands. And we can support them with some financial grants because of this donations we receive on through our website. So there are two ways of supporting the whole network, because if you support one organization, you actually support the whole network, because we are the bond between us are so strong.
Nice. And I think you can also find the local groups through the website Abortion Worldwide, right? So there you find the links.
This is Abortion Without Borders, actually. abortionwithoutborders.com or abortions.eu. Yeah, and there is connections between those pages.
Great. We will definitely also put this in the show notes, so all the listeners who are interested, they can check it out online and on social media and to see how they can get involved. Yes, thank you so much, Justina. It was really, really interesting to talk to you. I learned a lot. And yeah, it was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much.
For me also, it was a big pleasure, and hope we see somewhere in the future.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so too.
In other spaces.
Yes. Yes, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Ja, da sind wir wieder und wie nach jeder Folge sitzen Inge und ich jetzt noch zusammen und überlegen, ja, welche losen Enden es gibt und auch vor allem, was wir strategisch lernen können aus diesem Thema, aus dem Aktivismus von Justina. Mhm. Inge, sag doch mal, was bleibt bei dir hängen, was fandst du strategisch besonders interessant?
Ja, total viel. Also ich fand es wirklich ein sehr dichtes Gespräch. Man merkt, dass sie einfach ultra viel Erfahrung hat. Also 17 Jahre im Aktivismus. So, es ist einfach sehr, sehr viel Zeit.
Muss man erstmal schaffen.
Ja, auf jeden Fall. Und das, finde ich, merkt man ihr total an, dass sie da aus so einem sehr reichen Schatz schöpfen kann. Und das fand ich super beeindruckend und cool. Genau, wir gehen, denke ich, einfach so ein bisschen Teile durch. Eine Sache, die ich echt spannend fand, war, dass ich das Gefühl hatte, gerade am Anfang auch des Gesprächs, dass sie sehr stark um die gesetzlichen Vorgaben drumherum sozusagen ihre Strategien entwickeln. Also Abtreibungen auf eine bestimmte Art und Weise sind verboten, aber die mit den Pillen sind nicht so richtig reguliert. Außerdem sind sie schwerer nachzuweisen. Man darf sie nicht verschicken, aber man darf sie sich selber bestellen. Dann muss man genau die Informationen dazu bereitstellen, wie man sie sich bestellen kann zum Beispiel. So, das fand ich so eine Sache, die ich da sehr schlau gemacht fand. Und natürlich auch mit einer gewissen Risikobereitschaft, aber dann doch irgendwie ziemlich schlau für sich selber, für die Organisation, aber auch für die Frauen drumherum irgendwie organisiert, ja.
Ja, was die dabei irgendwie sehr gut machen, ist so diese Schlupflöcher ausnutzen letztendlich. Ne? Also ich musste auch ein bisschen denken an die Folge mit Arne Semsrott zu dem Freiheitsfonds, wo er ja auch gesagt hatte, es geht ihm immer darum, die Lücke im System zu finden. Mhm. Ich fand, das passt hier auch ganz gut.
Ja, das stimmt. Und das finde ich auch nochmal spannend, weil es ja auch nochmal so verknüpft ist, dann zum Beispiel mit, oder beziehungsweise, dass ja körperlich eine Abtreibung eigentlich genauso aussieht wie eine Fehlgeburt oder kleine Geburt. Und dass das sozusagen für das medizinische Personal auch gar nicht so richtig möglich macht, das zu unterscheiden und so. Und das sind sozusagen, finde ich, das eine, die Schlupflöcher im System, aber auch nochmal so eine Interaktion praktisch mit, wie sind eigentlich die körperlichen Gegebenheiten, mit denen man da agiert, irgendwie das sehr schlau zusammengedacht. Und das fand ich, und sozusagen sehr im Sinne der Betroffenen. Das fand ich irgendwie echt cool.
Ich finde, es ist tatsächlich auch ein sehr interessantes Thema, wenn man jetzt mal so ein bisschen rauszoomt auf diese Frage, die uns ja auch gerade irgendwie viel beschäftigt ist, so was kann man im Aufstieg der neuen Rechten entgegensetzen, dass es eben nun mal so ist, dass auch konservative Frauen Abtreibungen unter Umständen brauchen und man dadurch halt eine Situation hat, wo man die halt wegziehen kann von den Abtreibungsgegnern möglicherweise, also dass es da eben Leute gibt, die ja,
vielleicht sonst rechte Einstellungen vertreten und darüber aber dann so ein bisschen sich entfremden von der Rechten. In Polen hat das zumindest ganz gut geklappt scheinbar.
Ja.
Und da sieht man irgendwie auch, wie so ein Pro-Choice-Aktivismus ein Stück weit auch, ja, demokratiepolitisch eine gute Gegenstrategie ist gegen die neue Rechte, möglicherweise. Mhm. Weil eben die neuen Rechten so, dass es so eine Art Identitätspolitik für die ist, dieses Gegenabtreibung sein, mhm, dass sie dafür sogar in Kauf nehmen, Politik gegen Mehrheiten zu machen.
Ja. Das finde ich aber auch nochmal richtig, richtig interessant. Ich glaube, ich habe schon öfter von dem Buch erzählt, The Story of Jane, wo es um Abtreibungen in den 70ern in den USA ging. Und die hatten auch so Beispiele von Police Officern, die sie angerufen haben, weil ihre Frauen eine Abtreibung brauchten. Und sie sozusagen darüber aber irgendwie dann relativ sicher sein konnten, dass sie selber nicht verfolgt werden. Das ist echt, finde ich, total spannend. Oder auch das, was Justine jetzt erzählt hat mit den katholischen Frauen, die dann anrufen und sagen, ich habe einen ganz, ganz besonderen Fall. Und denen dann zu sagen, nee, ihr seid halt kein besonderer Fall. Schafft vielleicht ja auch eine Solidarität über politische Grenzen hinweg, die irgendwie richtig, die politisch sehr, sehr spannend ist, finde ich.
Ja, was ich da auch nochmal interessant fand, war, wie sie auf eine Art auch dieses Triggern der neuen Rechten auf eine Art für sich nutzen, um die praktisch zu ihren eigenen Botschaftern zu machen. Also Justine hat ja gesagt, ja, es passiert immer wieder, dass rechte Accounts irgendwie unsere Kampagne, unseren Aktivismus aufgreifen, um Stimmung gegen uns zu machen. Aber wir sehen das eher, wir machen da nichts dagegen, weil wir sehen das eher als so eine Art Unterstützung, dass sie damit ja ihren eigenen Followern auf Facebook zum Beispiel oder auf Twitter oder wo auch immer vermitteln, hier gibt es Frauen, die sich für Abtreibung einsetzen. Ergo, falls ihr eine braucht, behandelt, meldet euch bei denen.
Ja, voll. Finde ich auch einen extrem strategischen und sehr schlauen Umgang damit. Und ich glaube auch, dass man davon auch total was lernen kann. Also gerade, weil ich das Gefühl habe, es gibt ganz viel Hate Speech im Netz. Das ist auch gefährlich und sozusagen schlecht. Und es ist auch total wichtig, dagegen Sachen zu machen, aber trotzdem auch diesen strategischen Blick darauf zu haben, wo bringt uns das zum Teil auch rein und in welche Bubbles bringt uns das auch rein, den fand ich sehr interessant.
Und praktisch das Gegenbeispiel beobachtet man ja auch mal wieder. Also Linke sind oft sehr gut darin, sich aufzuregen über rechte Positionen und ihnen damit eine total große Sichtbarkeit zu geben im Diskurs. Ne?
Ja.
Also auch, wenn man so rumwendet, kann man davon was lernen.
Ja, das stimmt, das stimmt. Ja, eine Sache, die ich da richtig krass fand, war aber echt auch auf der anderen Seite dieses Outing auf, diese Outings auf Facebook, von denen sie ganz am Ende erzählt. Also, boah, richtig krass. Also ich vermute, eine ziemlich wirksame Strategie, da den Familien zu schreiben von irgendwie jungen Frauen, die die Abtreibung brauchen und so, aber echt einfach richtig bösartig und extrem schwer, ja auch die Frauen da zu schützen irgendwie. Beziehungsweise die einzige Möglichkeit halt, dass man sicherstellt, dass sonst im Internet außerhalb von Facebook irgendwie alle Informationen leicht findbar und verfügbar sind. Aber das fand ich echt ganz schön krass.
Ja, ich finde es auch einen interessanten Punkt, wie da praktisch auf eine Art diese Architektur von sozialen Medien auf eine Art auch wie so aus dem Kontext genommen wird, beziehungsweise dann für ganz andere Sachen genutzt werden kann. Also dieses Facebook, we are all one community und ich zeige, wer mein Partner, meine Mutter und so weiter. Wir verlinken uns alle gegenseitig, immer unsere Familienfotoalben öffentlich sichtbar drin, eben dann genutzt werden kann in solchen Momenten,
total,
um die Menschen zu targeten. Ne?
Total, voll, voll. Da brauchst du ja auch sozusagen ein bisschen jetzt anderes Feld, aber eigentlich auch total viel Wissensvermittlung drüber, wie man sich sozusagen online auch die eigene Identität schützen kann. Naja, vielleicht gehen wir nochmal weiter. Was ich auch spannend fand, ist, dass das so ein krass transnationales Thema ist. Und das kommt ja eigentlich gar nicht aus der Sache her, dass irgendwie eine Abtreibung an sich eine transnationale Sache wäre, sondern es kommt ja wirklich sozusagen einfach aus der gesetzlichen Situation heraus und dass das halt sozusagen die einzige Möglichkeit manchmal ist, eine Abtreibung zu kriegen. Und dann sozusagen, dass ich aber da sozusagen als Antwort darauf auf sozusagen diese Situation auch so super transnationale Organisierung geschaffen hat. Das fand ich irgendwie richtig spannend und auch richtig cool. Also auch irgendwie voll schön zu sehen, wie sich da so eine solidarische Gemeinschaft von Organisationen gebildet hat, die sich gegenseitig unterstützen und auch finanziell unterstützen. Das fand ich richtig, richtig cool zu sehen und eine echt, finde ich, sehr, sehr praktische Form von internationaler oder transnationaler Solidarität. Ja.
Ja, das finde ich auch. Da gibt es wahrscheinlich auch gar nicht so krass viele Beispiele dafür, wie sowas so gut gelingen kann. Also echt heftig.
Ja, fand ich, glaube ich, auch tatsächlich. Und ich hatte es auch gar nicht so vermutet tatsächlich in dem Bereich.
Nee. Gleichzeitig, man hat ja schon auch immer, also bei dem Thema auch immer wieder erlebt, wie als Roe versus Wade in den USA gekippt wurde, dieses Grundsatzurteil da vom Verfassungsgericht, dem US-amerikanischen Verfassungsgericht, da hatte man ja schon auch hier das krass das Gefühl, dass viele Frauen das total unmittelbar beschäftigt hat.
Mhm.
Also gar nicht nur im Sinne von, ah, irgendwo anders passiert was, sondern so.
Ich war auch richtig wütend.
Ja. Und ja, von daher irgendwie, wenn man es jetzt, in dem Moment, wo man es jetzt weiß, denkt man sich irgendwie, ah, okay.
Auch irgendwie klar. Voll, weil es ja auch was ist, was einen direkt betrifft. Also ich finde schon so den Gedanken, dass einfach irgendwelche, meistens ja alten Männer denken, sie können über meinen Körper bestimmen und auch, dass man mir in der Gesellschaft zutraut, dass ich meine Steuern zahle, dass ich was mieten kann selber, dass ich sozusagen Sachen unterschreibe und dass ich ja sonst überall auch gesetzlich selbstverantwortlich bin. Nur in dem einen Bereich, der wirklich meinen Körper und mein komplettes Sein und ja auch meine ganze Lebensplanung betrifft, glauben andere Leute, dass sie da irgendwie ein Wort mitzureden haben. Das ist ja auch total, ich merke, ich werde direkt wieder ein bisschen wütend, das finde ich, ist auch einfach absurd. Und deswegen finde ich das irgendwie auch, ergibt es ja total Sinn, dass man sich davon sehr direkt betroffen fühlt, auch wenn das woanders passiert und vor allem, wenn man das Gefühl hat, dass es so eine internationale Bewegung gerade gibt in so eine Richtung. Vielleicht kommen wir nochmal ein bisschen zu, ich glaube so ein bisschen, eigentlich ist das so ein bisschen so ein großer letzter Block, wo es um Stigmatisierung viel geht. Also und sozusagen den gesellschaftlichen Diskurs um Abtreibung. Und ich fand richtig interessant nochmal zu sehen, wie sie analysiert hat, wie Stigmatisierung funktionieren. Also dass sie einerseits in die Richtung funktionieren zu sagen, die Leute fühlen sich alleine, weil niemand drüber redet und sind deswegen in einer Situation, wo sie die Unterstützung brauchen, total unsicher und wissen nicht, wo sie die kriegen können. Und dass sie aber dann in die andere Richtung auch wieder so wirkt, dass die Frauen niemandem davon erzählen, wenn sie es gemacht haben. Und das sozusagen dann so ein sich selber fortschreitendes System ist und sie da ja auch ganz konkret versuchen, reinzugehen mit der Gegenarbeit. Also dass sie dann ja sehr konkret Leute ermutigen, ihre Erfahrungen zu teilen, die dabei zu unterstützen, selber damit angefangen haben. Da musste ich natürlich auch daran denken, an die Stern-Story in Deutschland in den 60ern, als Alice Schwarzer und viele andere Frauen hier öffentlich gemacht haben, dass sie abgetrieben haben. Also wie wichtig auch so große Kampagnen tatsächlich sind, wo viele Leute sagen, das ist was, was uns alle betrifft. Und das ist ja auch wirklich, ich glaube, in Deutschland sind Schwangerschaftsanbrüche öfter oder so oft wie Blinddarm-OPs.
Okay.
Also es ist wirklich ein einfach total häufiger Eingriff, wo aber selbst hier ja viele Leute nicht drüber reden.
Ja, das ist irgendwie auf jeden Fall interessant und auch wichtig, so dieses, man muss erstmal einem politischen Problem auch eine Sichtbarkeit geben durch persönliche Geschichten, damit überhaupt auch deutlich wird, wie breit es Leute betrifft. Und Stigmatisierung ist auf eine Art auch immer halt ein Silencing oder ein, wie sagt man das auf Deutsch?
Also, so eine Art Vereinzelungsstrategie für die Gegenseite. Ne?
Genau, von der Gegenseite, um das zu verhindern. Es gab ja auch, ich musste jetzt gerade auch nochmal an diese eine Story denken, wo Frauen gesagt haben, ich bin eine Quotenfrau.
Ah, jetzt weiß ich gar nicht, wo das ist.
Und das auch so zu enttabuisieren, dieses Thema, ne? Also irgendwie nur irgendwo nur hingekommen zu sein aufgrund von Geschlecht. Also dieses, ist eine Aneignungsstrategie. Genau, aber vielleicht war es das auch einfach für heute, oder?
Ja, ich glaube schon. Also ich merke jetzt auch, die Nachbesprechung war jetzt auch dicht. Dieses Interview war auch schon lang, deswegen haben wir uns ein bisschen Mühe gegeben, dass ihr nicht mehr zu lange zuhören müsst.
Ja.
Aber ich glaube, da kann man echt einfach richtig viele wichtige Perspektiven mitnehmen.
Ja, wenn es euch gefallen hat, dann freuen wir uns mega darüber, wenn ihr uns bewertet auf Spotify oder wo ihr sonst den Podcast gerade hört. Und neuerdings gibt es bei Spotify auch die Möglichkeit, ja, Fragen zu beantworten. Für uns ist es immer ganz cool, wenn wir auch mal so ein bisschen Feedback von euch bekommen, weil wir ja sonst gar nicht so genau wissen, wer hört das, wie findet ihr das und so weiter. Von daher schreibt uns da auch gerne was, das freut uns mega. Und dann natürlich auch freuen wir uns natürlich weiterhin darüber, wenn ihr was tun und Dissens im Doppelpack fördert und ja, Teil der Community werdet und dazu beitragt, dass wir das auch in Zukunft für alle werbefrei und unabhängig diese Folgen produzieren können. Den Link dazu findet ihr in den Shownotes und dann würde ich jetzt sagen,
wir hoffen, ihr bleibt uns gewogen,
wenn es in einem Monat wieder heißt,
was tun. Tschüss.
Ciao.
Das war der Was tun Podcast. Konzept und Redaktion Valentin Isen und Inken Bermann. Schnitt Julian Schwumberger. Die Musik kommt von Richard Waterman.